Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Brian Fisher at CBSSports.com. Pleased to introduce my friend and new colleague, Bruce Feldman, for the inaugural edition of the Free Bruce podcast. Bruce, how does it feel to have a podcast in your honor?
Yeah, outstanding. Glad that we're able to use the new medium and all the other arms of CBS that we're trying to stretch out. It's fun to talk some college football.
Absolutely, absolutely. We will be doing plenty of that over the coming weeks in the season, and having on guests, we'll have Mike Leach on later on the podcast. Of course, he did a book with you, Swing Your Sword. He's doing some book signings, including one in Los Angeles. He'll have another on Phoenix in a couple of days, and just one of the most interesting people in college football, and a phenomenal book, Bruce, and it had to be so much fun working with Mike and doing the book.
Yeah, he's obviously an interesting guy, you know, in addition to, you know, being a very innovative offensive mind. You know, here's a guy who could, you know, literally go on and talk about the connection between Howard Stern and Seinfeld and what all those things can mean to communicating, with your team and different, you know, kind of cross sections and lines that he can go through. It's pretty remarkable, you know, just his stream of consciousness and the directions he can go. It's unlike anything I'd ever seen, you know, and so a lot of the book we talk about, you know, how his mind works and a lot of how that manifests itself as a coach and what it was like coaching, you know, at the NAIA level, where he and Hal Mumme really took the some of the ideas they got from BYU and developed them into this air raid system, and one of the reasons why you see so many guys of their disciples who are coaching guys putting up prolific numbers right now. I mean, that comes from that system and how they developed it, and you get to see that. You also get a sense of, you know, I think his biggest win was when they upset number one Texas a few years ago, and it's really that whole game and how what his thought process is like in terms of as a play caller and how his offense really works and the anatomy of that. You get to read, you know, throughout that with this one particular chapter. So I think a lot of those things will be fascinating for people. It's not just a, you know, a book about what had been in the headlines with he and Craig James and ESPN and Space Communications. I think that's only about, you know, 10% of it, not even. But the rest of it is really, you know, it's in depth about a coaching life and you know, how he came to be, you know, how his mind really works and how some of these things in football have been developed over the years and running a program and everything like that for a better part of a decade.
And we'll have on Mike on in a few minutes on the podcast and look forward to hearing his thoughts. But first I wanted to ask you, Bruce, the big game I think that everybody's been talking about recently was the Wisconsin-Nebraska game. And, you know, to me, I thought that was really kind of Russell Wilson's coming out party. I mean, we had seen in the previous couple of games, yeah, they didn't really play a marquee opponent, but, you know, you saw the beginnings of him running that offense, and you said, hey, here's another added dimension with him being able to run the ball in addition to his passing skills. That really adds something to Wisconsin, and I think it makes him a national title contender.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that he is kind of an X factor for them. What has been remarkable to me about him is this isn't a guy who had spring football, was a junior college transfer, or, you know, any kind of addition like that. He came in late. He had to learn the offense, you know, which, you know, he's a bright guy, and obviously he was able to pick it up really fast. And talking to Brett Bielema, he was, you know, amazed at how quickly Wilson was able to do that. But not only that, to really blend in with his team and win over his teammates, you know, that's no given for anybody who comes in, you know, as late as he did. Well, he was able to do that, and you're right. He is, you know, his mobility is something different for what Wisconsin has, and I think he adds a dimension to this play action game because of, you know, Wisconsin with the bruising offensive line and the good running backs that they have. We knew that they, you know, that's the bread and butter, but talking to guys who've played against them already this season, they said, you know, you really have some issues on your defensive line because he's the guy. Before, you didn't have to worry about somebody tucking it and running it. Now you do. He can burn you with that. And I think, you know, the last part of this has been his development as a passer, because he has better talent around him. You know, in 3 years at NC State, for as sharp as he was in terms of, you know, a 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio over those 3 years as a starter in the ACC, he never completed over 59% of his passes. Well, he goes into the Big Ten, or goes to Wisconsin, and now he's up around 75%. And that's a huge jump. And you saw it in the first half when they really went at it against Nebraska. I think he was 12 of 16 in the first half for like 230 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And they were taking advantage of Nebraska's defense, getting guys behind him, and he could hit the passes to burn them. And I think you get that vertical dimension to the ground game that they have, and they're going to be a tough out. I mean, I think they're going to prove to be the class of the Big Ten. Now, the back end of that question is, are they good enough, are they great enough to be able to hang and beat maybe an LSU or an Alabama, who look like they're going to be, you know, maybe the team to come out of the SEC, and they're going to be waiting for whoever it is, whether it's Oklahoma or Wisconsin or maybe Clemson or Boise State. You know, I think Oklahoma has the firepower to be in that mix. I don't know. We'll see if Wisconsin, because there's been huge issues for the Big Ten going up against the SEC. Quite honestly, there's been huge issues for everybody going up against the SEC elite at the end of the year. So that's, you know, we're not going to know about that for a while, but that's the fun part of this season.
Look at Wisconsin, and I'm reminded because Greg Doyle wrote this on CBSSports.com today. This is a Monday. We're taping it. It's almost how Wisconsin and Oklahoma have to continue to blow out opponents going forward just to be in that race for that spot opposite of the SEC. It's almost like the LSU-Alabama game in November is going to be a national semifinal, and then it's kind of whoever, I guess, survives and becomes undefeated, and then we'll talk about it later in the year. That seems like that's the title race right there. It's Alabama, LSU, and then whoever's undefeated at the end of the year.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point he made, and you're echoing, because, you know, you win 5 national titles in a row, and you get the benefit of the doubt. And if you don't win them and you lose the big games, I think you don't have that. And that's an issue now, and I, you know, kind of wrote a little about this yesterday in my column, is, and started to get at it, and then I was like, you know what, there's a lot of stuff to go into, which is the pole position here. You know, Wisconsin, you know, needs to be impressive. Oklahoma needs to be impressive. I think those are going to be the two teams potentially who jockey, you know, who have the best spot to get into the other, that other slot that the SEC is going to take one. Now, if you're Clemson, or if you're, or Boise State, or if you're Stanford, you need help. You definitely need one of the SEC schools to get knocked off. You need that Big 12 champion to get knocked off, or you need the Big Ten, you know, team to get knocked off. Because I think, you know, if it's Michigan, I don't know. I think you would have an interesting argument for the Clemsons or whoever. You know, I don't think Boise State's going to be overtaking any team from a powerhouse conference if it's undefeated. I just think that no matter how impressive their record is over the last 5 years, I just don't think they can cover that. But in terms of, you know, the rest of the landscape, that jockeying for the position to play the SEC team is going to be a really interesting storyline or subplot to the season. Having said that, it's still early October, and a lot of weird stuff happens, and teams get knocked off, and, you know, I think it's tempting for a lot of us and the media and a lot of fans to get caught up in the what-if scenario if it starts to inch closer to a, you know, 3 or 4 undefeated teams. And, you know, it's very rare that it ends up happening, but, you know, you never know. And if it does, I think there's reason for people to get nervous, just because, you know, unless you're an SEC team, there's no guarantee that you're going to make it there.
And, you know, one of those teams that we've been talking about, the Sooners, they kind of have the big spotlight on them against Texas this week. Texas is an intriguing team. This is the first time, these teams have met where they're both undefeated in the past couple of years. And, Texas, two new coordinators. They're young, two young quarterbacks. They got Jackson Shipley, who's a freshman, a young guy that they're relying on, a young defense. And, this is really their first test going up against Oklahoma. And I would say, based on what we saw against Florida State do the last couple of weeks, probably the Sooners' toughest test as well. How do you see this game shaping up?
Well, I think Oklahoma, as you said, has such an edge in experience at some key places that I think that they should win this game. And I hate to talk moral victories, especially when you're a program as big and proud as Texas. But they really haven't, we don't know a ton about them, aside from they've looked a little better. I watched a lot of the Iowa State game early on. And I think Brian Harsin's done a really good job of building things. He keeps defenses on their heels. I like, you brought up Jackson Shipley. I mean, he just has a knack. I mean, he is making a lot of plays for them early. They've been able to get some ground game going. Again, they haven't played, anything close to a top 10 team. And now you're going to get a better class of athletes that they're going to be going up against, and a big time quarterback with good skill guys. And in a place that they know a lot about, big games. And I think that, I'm leaning to Oklahoma, I think Oklahoma's going to win. But assuming Texas does not lose like a 41-17 kind of game, and maybe it's, within two touchdowns, I think Texas is building here, whereas I think there's a lot, I don't want to say there's no pressure on them, but, I think the expectations are much lower right now. If Texas is competitive in this game and ends up going 9-3 this year, I think given turnover on the staff, given the questions at quarterback, which is big, especially in a league where everybody seems to have a gunslinger back there, I think that, if they can keep building, that's what you need. I don't think people need to expect them to go 11-1. This isn't Texas from 2007. Colt McCoy, his brother may be there, but it's not Colt McCoy at this point. And I think that, if you're UT, it's a different story if they get blown out. And then I think people kind of will look around and see how they'll react to it. Whereas if they're competitive, I think you're building. And this is a team that should continue to get a lot better, maybe more so than the typical team, because of their youth and because of them adapting to the new coordinators and so many of the new staff.
I think Texas is really one of the teams that really has almost a mirror image in the SEC in Florida. They're going to be without John Brantley at LSU this week. They're going to be starting a true freshman, very young on defense, new coordinators, new head coach, a lot of newness around that program. Yet, I think there again, if they can stay close, like you were saying with Texas, if they can stay close with LSU, going into Death Valley, playing them, LSU, obviously we talk about the defense, we talk about Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger. It's definitely going to be tough to score some points, but do you see this being just a complete blowout for LSU, or can Florida maybe surprise a little bit of people this week?
I'm leaning towards the blowout side. I think this is a bad spot. And I don't see UF being as competitive as I think Texas could be. I think they're going up against, you have a new quarterback going up against a nasty, aggressive defense. Look, I spent a week with West Virginia, where a three-year starting quarterback, albeit in a new system, was preparing to face this, attack, which is about 20 guys deep, and it's physical cornerbacks up in your face, and it's about 9 defensive linemen, and everybody can run. And that game was actually in Morgantown. This one's in their backyard. I think this is a problem for Will Muschamp. And you and I both saw Jeff Driscoll up close last year at Elite 11 and physical. And I said this the other day when I was in studio off camera. We were watching games, at CBS in New York, and some of the researchers were talking about, God, this is going to be bad, and he didn't look good at Kentucky. I was like, this guy actually has a ton of physical tools. I mean, you saw him show some of his speed the other night. I think he had like a 30-yard scramble against Alabama. His arm is very strong. It's just the speed of the game is going to be a huge issue there, and the decision-making. And I think they can only give him so much there that I think there's going to be all kinds of problems for them. And, You know, I mean, they do have players on defense, but I just think that it's going to be like a hornet's nest in there. And if Will Muschamp can keep them within 3 touchdowns, I think that that would be a great performance by them, just because I think this is going to be, you know, this isn't Kentucky rolling in there, or this isn't Northwestern State. I mean, they're going to get a full punch from LSU, and I think it could get scary. Here's the thing, what I do kind of think gets a little lost with them, and I'm not saying Jarrett Lee or now Jordan Jefferson's getting his feet settled in a little bit, are going to remind anybody Andrew Luck. But they do have, you know, 3 good running backs. I mean, you saw a little bit of Alfred Ballou the other day, and, you know, between Spencer Ware, who's going to get healthy, and Ford, you have some physical, athletic runners. But then you look outside, you mentioned Reuben Randall. Well, Russell Shepard's getting back into the go of it. And, you know, now that they have Odell Beckham coming on, I mean, this is a guy who makes people miss. Is it a problem? I mean, I think they have 4 or 5 really good athletes outside. You know, they can go to the tight end who can beat you deep. I mean, it's enough to be a problem. I mean, Russell Shepard is a dynamic athlete, and the more they can get him involved as kind of a change of pace, you know, they have legit firepower. I don't think they're asking them to be, you know, to all of a sudden turn around and turn it into an air show, because Les Miles knows his defense is so good. They may get 7 points on defense alone and set up 2 other touchdowns, and then all of a sudden you're looking at your 21 points in the hole against this team pretty much off the top, and then how are you going to get points? And the more you press, I mean, that's what I saw against West Virginia. I mean, Les Miles did this thing where he basically, against the odds, kind of took a 10-yard holding call, because he knew it would put more pressure on the West Virginia offense and forced a mistake, and it led to, you know, almost 2 plays later, it led to a touchdown. And I think when you have that kind of confidence in your defense, because you know that they're that good, I mean, you're in a different level of coaching than I think what most people out there are able to do right now, because of his personnel is so good.
You mentioned Andrew Luck kind of at the beginning of that, and he's a guy that we've seen, you know, we're both in Los Angeles, and he's a guy we've seen often, and I think, you know, in my mind, he's still the Heisman Trophy front runner. I still think he's out front. I mean, obviously others are going to put big numbers up, you know, they're going to continue to run the ball. But within that offense, he is so good and so precise, and really just levels ahead of everybody else in terms of, you know, being a top level quarterback, that, you know, it was just amazing. And, you know, the game against UCLA, a perfect example. He caught a pass, an amazing one-handed catch, and then he called his own plays for 2 2-minute drives. I thought that to me was kind of one of the biggest things that I took out of the weekend, was, you know, college quarterbacks rarely get to call their own plays, and here he did it for 2 whole drives.
Yeah, and that's true, and that's not just audibilizing. I mean, having the full menu of the offense, as David Shaw later explained, the coach there, that's saying something. Look, he's, you know, I've said this before, he's about as close to can't miss as you're going to get in a college quarterback prospect. Having said that, if Robert Griffin had been able to pull out the win and make that fourth quarter drive against K-State, you know, I had him as my leader last week in the Heisman. He would have stayed there. But, you know, his performance so far has been, you know, it was an A+. I mean, just because he almost has to be perfect to overtake Andrew Luck at this point. And that's, you know, that's hard. I mean, that's almost impossible. What he's been able to do has been, you know, just astounding. You know, and you're talking about a guy in Griffin who has world-class speed, one of the fastest men who's ever played quarterback in college, and yet he plays the game now all of a sudden like he's Dan Marino, where he wants to operate from the pocket and put that program on his back. And I think that what he's done in the first month has been, you know, we knew he was very good, but I think he's been great so far. And well, it'll be interesting to see if he can, you know, in a little bit, Denard Robinson was so spectacular in the first month or so of the last season that you had to put him in the, you know, near the top of the Heisman early rankings, just because you have to acknowledge it after a while. After more than 1 or 2 games, you know, in the case of Griffin, it was 3 games. After a while, you go, okay, it's not 1 game, it's 3 games. And the first game was against TCU. It wasn't like it was against Texas State. I mean, you know, albeit TCU is not what it was last year, it's still Gary Patterson's defense, and you still had to acknowledge who was shredding it. So I think that as this Heisman race goes, you know, there's going to be tougher games for Andrew Luck coming up, you know, soon, and we're going to find out more about him. We obviously know he has great tight ends, and we know he's very smart, and we know he can tackle, and we know now he can catch, and obviously we know he can read it, you know, pick apart a coverage and attack it, which is what he showed, you know, last week against UCLA. As far as the rest of the guys in that mix, you know, Trent Richardson was huge against Florida on the road last week, and I think because his team's going to keep winning, I think he's going to be there. You know, I think Kellen Moore is always going to be in people's top five, you know, and I think he's going to need people to lose, really, or else he's almost like a default candidate in this. I mean, Marcus Lattimore was cruising until last week, and, you know, obviously they had some issues. So this, I do feel like this is kind of Andrew Luck's deal to lose, but, you know, we'll see, because the preseason favorite doesn't always win in the BCS, and it doesn't always win the Heisman.
That's Bruce Feldman. I'm Brian Fisher here on the Free Bruce podcast on CBSSports.com. I'm going to bring in our special guest for the podcast, a man who needs no introduction to quarterback play. He's the author of Swing Your Sword, Leading the Charge in Football and Life, along with Bruce. Mike Leach, the former Texas Tech coach, will join us on the podcast, and can't wait for this. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, and I'm a huge fan of Freeing Bruce. You know, I think Bruce has paid his price, and he's done his penance, and, you know, and I think his oppressor should be brought to justice.
Absolutely, absolutely, and, you know, who better to have on? And, you know, I'm curious, with all that's gone on with the book, and it's a New York Times bestseller, you've been going across the country at all these book signings, what's been kind of the most memorable moment you've had over the last couple months?
You know, here in L.A. was pretty memorable. I ran across a guy I went to high school with that I hadn't seen since he left high school. He was kind of one of the studs on our high school football team. Two guys that I went to law school with, I hadn't seen them since law school. You know, yeah, every one of these, there's always some surprises. I mean, a guy that played with Sam DeBam Cunningham, I mean, are you kidding me? And then the stories of people I've run across, you know, it's all fascinating, and I think that's all part of the appeal of the book, is the fact that, you know, people all over the place are passionate about something, and I think that, you know, to see it pursued on any level is interesting, and I think it brings a lot of people in, and then in the course of it, given the fact everybody's passionate about something, I think it draws them in, too, with their own stories and things like that, and I think that's one thing that's been really thrilling to me, is to have the opportunity to share in other people's experiences in the course of this. And then, you know, and I think people say, well, why is the book on the New York Times bestseller list? I mean, there's some sensation here and there. We won a bunch of big games. And then, of course, you know, there's some villains that pulled some shady stuff, and we've got the material on them in their own words, but ultimately I'm starting to run into a lot of people that aren't even football fans, that don't care too much about football in particular, but they, you know, they're fascinated about the pursuit of passion, the lessons learned along the way, and so I think there's a lot of things, you know, that we've brought out in the book that, you know, that touch people on levels different than football, because, you know, it's kind of the point, like I said, where I'm running into a lot of people that aren't necessarily football fans but really enjoyed the book and are telling their friends.
So I got a question now. What, you've been in the media now, you've been interviewing coaches on your radio show, and so what more do you think you've learned about actually how the media works, and just from your perspective now, having seen it from a different side, and also, you know, kind of going back through it, you know, through this book process?
Well, I think you'd agree with this. Outside of the media betraying me like they did you, you know, Craig James and his national smear campaign, and of course you worked for ESPN for 17 years, I've always had a good relationship with the media, because I've always, you know, I understand their job. I mean, their job Well, first of all, they want action. I've never bought the notion that the media just wants negative stuff. The media just wants action. They want positive action's great. Negative action will work too, and they certainly don't shy away from that. And the thing is, I've always spoken freely with them. Typically, I've given them my cell phone number and say, "Well, call me if you got." And that's all worked really well. Now, of course, sometimes as a coach, you have different ends than they do, and you can't let them in on everything, which that's understandable. But I've always tried to where I can.
Mike, I'm curious, if you kind of go back to 2008, which is kind of a seminal moment, I think, in Texas Tech history, you took the program to number two in the country. You beat Texas, obviously, in a thrilling game. That was really a huge spotlight on the program. Did you know going into that season that you could have a special year?
Yes, I did think so. I thought that would be a special year. And I'll tell you, the other year, and I didn't get a chance to coach the team, but 2010 I thought would be a special year. And the reason I thought 2010 would be a special year is because in 2009, because of injuries, I've only had quarterbacks injured one season in my career, and I got two of them injured, and that was in 2009. So we played three quarterbacks, yet despite that, we beat Oklahoma by four touchdowns, and we beat Nebraska up there by three touchdowns. And we had everybody back. It would have been everybody back in 2010. I thought that was our most talented year. But, yes, I did feel like 2008 was going to be really good. I thought 2009 would be good. Not sure they'd be as good as 2008. I think, in hindsight, I think they would have been as good, maybe even better than 2008 if we hadn't had some quarterbacks go down. 2010 was the most talented group.
If you could, now that you've had a different perspective on it, if somebody made you kind of czar of college football, what's the first thing you would change about the sport or how it's run?
Playoffs. I'd have playoffs. 64-team playoff. I would cut the regular season down to 10 games. I would guarantee everybody 12 games. So if you got eliminated earlier, before you played 12 games, you had the opportunity to schedule two other games. Or even if you got eliminated in the first round, you could schedule another game. We got some went off weeks at the same time, as in kind of in the middle. Half the country would be off, the other half would be on, and so it goes. And then do the same the next week. The first round of 64 would be home and home. And then you'd incorporate the bowls, and the champions would play 16 games, which is what, interestingly enough, Texas High School does, California High School does. Of course, the NFL plays more. That's what Division III does, Division II does, and 1AA does. And so, it's really not terribly demanding. I think the bowls are great, and I think they ought to be utilized to incorporate this. But, at the rate that TV puts on football, 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 and at the rate that conferences sell their soul to TV, and then all of a sudden we want to limit football on the 1A level, yet in the NFL they're able to play more games. The lower divisions are able to play more games, and somehow magically we're limited to this because we're 1A.
Brian Fisher alongside Bruce Feldman here on the Free Bruce podcast. A New York Times bestselling author, Mike Leach, joins us. And, Mike, one final question before we wrap up here. Obviously, the book is doing terrific. You still have some book signings going on over the next couple months. But what's next for you personally? I mean, are you looking to actively get back into coaching after the season?
Oh, I'm looking to get back into coaching, and I'm excited about the opportunity to. I've enjoyed my time. As far as the diversity of activity, I never thought, I've had the opportunity to be friends with Bruce for years, but I never thought that, best-selling book. I didn't know that was going to happen. I didn't know I'd broadcast. I didn't know I'd be on Sirius 5 or 6 days a week. I didn't know I'd get to travel all over. And so that's been a lot of fun, but the payoff in coaching's higher, and it's, and I enjoy that. And it's the middle of my career, and I certainly have, more years left that'll be even more productive than the ones before, and I'm excited about those as well.
Well, Swing Your Sword is the book. It's a New York Times bestseller. In case you haven't heard, pick it up at bookstores across the country. You can order it online. And just a phenomenal read from cover to cover, and a great background for Mike. And appreciate you joining us on the first Free Bruce podcast. I think it's pretty appropriate that you're our first guest.
Well, I do too, and I think that and it's good to, you know, I mean, we know that Bruce is was alive and kicking, but, you know, and his oppression's over, but I'm not sure that, I think that, you know, now I think it's time to set the record straight and make it clear in everybody's mind that, you know, some of the behavior that he was subjected to and that I was subjected to won't be tolerated.
Absolutely, and you can find out more if you read through the book and check out the appendixes and find out what really happened, and pick it up at bookstores near you. Appreciate it, Mike. For my partner in crime and the namesake of the podcast, Bruce Feldman, I'm Brian Fisher. Be sure to catch more on CBSSports.com.